All right. Ladies and gentlemen, the steering committee has been reconvened. We are here at the Brews Beers Worldwide Headquarters, the main brewery up on 67th Ave.
Not Brews on Facts,
which, like where we usually record from, but we're at the mothership right here. This is the actual, as I look to my left, I can see their brewing tanks.
Yep.
They have their main tasting room here, and we're sampling, again, some of their delicious beers. I'm drinking,
this is the left hand. What's the left hand?
Left hand lady.
Yeah.
Left hand lady. Yeah. And
we're joined today by guest Adam Block.
Yeah.
What are you drinking, Adam?
I have the Diablo Mandarino.
Nice. Oh, nice. I don't even know what that is, but we'll...
Yeah. How is it?
It's good. Yeah. It's like a fruity Belgian strong ale.
Yes. Excellent.
So Adam,
we're here at this location this week. Also want to remind everybody, August 29th, we're going to do a Belgian Grand Prix watch party from this brewery. So come join us if you want to. If you're curious as to what Ryan and I look like, come join
that's
us.
That's not the way to get the people like here, Doug. But
Ryan is devastatingly handsome. I don't know if their audience knows this or not.
You can say anything on a podcast, right?
Come join us on August 29th around 2 p.m.
So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so. And we'll obviously post this on our social media, and I think we'll have it on their page.
I've been on there all over the place.
Excellent.
So, yeah.
And like I said, we got a guest today. We're joined by Adam Block, and Adam is a neat guy. We met Adam at the BMW Ultimate Driving Experience a few weeks back. We did a show on that. Started talking with Adam and found out he's got a 987 Cayman. Very cool. What did you call it? An Overland Vanagon?
It's aspirational Overland.
It works for me.
Maybe halfway there.
We'll talk about that, and we'll talk about the Cayman. But also very interesting, to me at least, is, and I hope I probably do you too, and if you're listening, and I'll edit that out, is that Adam is CFO of something called Vinyl Me Please, which is very cool. And Vinyl Me Please, how would you describe Vinyl Me Please in a nutshell?
Vinyl Me Please is an exploration company for people like to discover new music and meet people through music and go deeper in the music than you do with Spotify.
So you'll do reissues of classic albums, you'll work with the artist, is that right?
We do mostly reissues of classic albums, oftentimes working with the artist. And we also sell new releases as well.
Okay.
There's always something special about the one we're selling. So either you can't get it anywhere, but from us, because we made it, or it's a different color or a different packaging or it's got extra liner notes written by a famous artist. We like to have the deluxe, definitive version of the album. So kind of like the Criterion collection, but for vinyl.
I love that. We were just talking on the last episode about how, you know, even if we don't necessarily use a toolkit, we like that the toolkit's there. Even if we don't crack the manual of a car, we like to know that it's in the glove box. I like that sort of, what would you call it, curated sort of collection, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's highly curated, and it's different from the vinyl you get at Walmart or Target, which, you can listen to as well. There's nothing wrong with it. But ours is kind of the deluxe version that caters to collectors.
See, I think I was thinking there's something was wrong with that vinyl they sell at Target. Like it was, not audiophile quality.
It's like the Honda Accord of vinyl.
Okay, so there's nothing wrong with it.
Nothing wrong with it.
Would that be the same with like the records they sell at like Urban Outfitters?
Urban Outfitters is maybe like the Honda Accord with something different about it. But nothing performance-wise.
The LX or EX edition.
Yeah, exactly.
Or Type S. Yeah.
And you guys are in Boulder? Is that right?
We're in Denver. I guess I live in Boulder, so we have a Boulder office in Gun Barrel, Colorado. Yeah.
That's how the company's rolled today, right?
Satellite office.
Cool. And so, do you specialize in a certain kind of music, a little bit of everything? Is it just excellent music no matter what the genre?
So we're kind of all over the spectrum of music. We have four main subscription tracks.
Okay.
Country, hip-hop, classics, which is soul, jazz, and R&B pre-1980, and essentials, which is everything from Queen and Night of the Opera to Queens of the Stone Age.
No kidding.
So the whole spectrum, it's an essential album you have to own. Next month, it's Wu-Tang Clan.
Nice.
So,
I heard you saw them with the symphony here.
Yeah, we saw them at Red Rocks on Friday with the Colorado Symphony Orchestra.
Fantastic.
Definitely one of the coolest Red Rocks experiences I've ever been to. Probably
that's awesome.
More than 10, 15 shows. I mean, the acoustics with a full symphony orchestra are just pretty wild.
That's amazing.
It was mind-blowing. Yeah, they had Kung Fu movies in the background. The music was
synced. Oh, wow.
It was just, I had no idea what to expect, and it exceeded my expectations.
So you probably met everyone. You've probably seen everyone. I mean, what are you into personally? Like, What scratches your itch?
I love the Grateful Dead, if you can't tell from my hat.
Yeah, I saw that.
I love
Fish. And the shirt too, right?
T-shirt too.
It's a cool shirt.
Thank you. But I love everything. Yeah. I love 80s hip-hop. Growing up in New York in the 80s, I have a, affection for Biggie Smalls and that era of music.
Right, so you fall on that
Soul.
Side.
Yeah,
Biggie
Coast.
Versus Tupac, you're a Biggie.
Oh, 100%.
Right on. Okay, I knew I liked you.
East Coast, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I play tenor saxophone, so steeped in bebop, jazz, John Coltrane, Sonny Rollins, Dexter Gordon, Wayne Shorter.
I knew you were going to be a good guest. Yeah. Like Wayne Shorter.
My criteria for music I like to listen to is that it's artistic.
Yep.
It can be pop, it can be hip hop, it can be jazz, as long as there's some element of artistry to it.
Well, because there's excellent music in any genre, right?
Absolutely.
And if you get, when people say, oh, I don't like country, you just probably haven't heard really good country.
Yeah, Johnny Cash live at Folsom Prison and tell me you don't like country.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's the kind of music that moves you.
I
checked out the website. I mean, I love how beautifully everything is designed. You know, you obviously have a creative staff who does a great job. Probably a Beastie Boys fan.
I like the Beastie Boys.
What's your favorite album?
License Sale.
Yeah, so one of the all-time great records. And you listen to it now, and you hear things that other people weren't doing for 10 or 15, 20 years.
Definitely ahead of its time.
Rick Rubin, produced, obviously. Mm-hmm. That is a masterpiece. I mean, there's nothing quite like... tell me you don't like hip-hop or whatever, right?
Exactly, I was in middle school when that came out, and a lot of the music I love to buy on vinyl and for us to make on vinyl is stuff that I own the CD of, and I remember riding my bicycle to the local record store when I was 12, 13 years old and buying the CD of it.
Yeah.
That's one of the things.
The long box. Were you old enough to remember the long box?
I do remember that.
I remember that.
That's one of the reasons why I like old cars, because I still have my CD. I'm not good at throwing things out, so I still have my old CD collection, hundreds of CDs from the 90s, and I listen to them in the old cars that I own, and it's extremely nostalgic, especially when you remember where the CD skips, and then it still skips.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, just the smell of the packaging, right? Like, to your point, being able to sit and have liner notes, right? And that's obviously missing with something like iTunes.
Let me just jump in here for a second.
Yeah.
My wife and I have had this fantasy, and we're going to try and do this sometime. I would love to be able to build our new music collection. We have it all digital now, but I want to go back and get, analog. But what I'd love to be able to do is, any album, if it came out on CD first, I want that on CD. If it came out on vinyl, I want it on vinyl. I don't know what I'd do with that. I don't really know what to do with the sort of the tape era, because I think that kind of, I don't know if that's necessarily the best format for the music, but I want to kind of hear it in the way that a first person who bought it at that time would have heard it. So if it was on vinyl,
so what was mastered for? Is that the lingo?
Yeah, kind of. But it's also I want to pretend I'm
right,
in 1968 putting on
Van Halen should be on a cassette, right?
Well, I guess that's where, and that's kind of where it falls apart. But do you think that would? I mean, is it? Could I even find old cassettes of an old Van Halen album?
Yeah,
do you think?
I have a cassette collection. They're fun to collect because they're cheap.
Actually,
cassettes are growing faster than vinyl.
Isn't
I think
crazy?
About 100 were sold 3 years ago, so 200% is only a few hundred more sold.
Okay.
But cassettes are extremely portable.
Yeah.
And there's
it was great for cars.
Dead,
yeah.
That's the whole.
Everything's live, right? Everything's handed down.
When I drive my 1990. VW van, I love to listen to. It doesn't have a cassette deck. Its previous owner removed that and put a CD player in.
Yeah.
But I have a Walkman. I connect to the auxiliary.
My
bootleg tapes. Yeah. It's great. Yeah.
So you have a turntable in this thing too.
I do. Yeah.
So set sort of the scene for this. So it's we just looked at this thing.
Yeah. We just walked around, so we got a tour of it. But introduce it to us.
So what's your current car lineup?
So I have the van, which is a 1990 VW Westfalia. It's lightly modified. It looks all stock, generally period correct. Okay. It's a blast to take camping.
It's a blast to take
the dogs. Yeah, it has a Ford Focus 2001 engine, which increases the horsepower by 50% over stocks instead of 90. You have a whopping 140.
And it's a manual, so
it's a manual, of course,
TSC approved. Yeah.
But even though it only goes up to 150, that seems like a significant jump in power from the stock car. Yeah,
yeah, it goes from being 20% slower than the slowest car in the road to about equal to the slowest car in the road.
So it keeps
up with traffic.
That's important though to be able to feel like it's a liability when you're going onto an on ramp at a highway.
I can at least
catch up with cars.
Sometimes downhill I can get it up to 75, 80, but it looks like a brick. So I passed the cop once and was actually kind of excited at the prospect of getting a speeding ticket. Might actually be the first ever speeding ticket in one of those, but he didn't even notice it because he's no way my gun could be referring to that thing.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of the opposite. We were talking about the GT4 could be doing 30 and they'll get a speeding ticket, right?
Yeah. So
maybe that's where it's at, or sort of the would you call that the yin to the yang of one of your other cars, the Cayman?
Definitely, Cayman. So I have a 2007 Porsche Cayman S, and basically that does everything that the van doesn't do. So between the van and the Cayman S, you do anything you want in a car. It's Guards Red. I bought it
classic.
When a company I worked for that I had equity in was acquired, and all of a sudden the equity I thought was worth nothing was worth a bunch. So my whole life I always wanted a Porsche, so yeah. I got it for myself, and it's a lot of fun to drive. Mostly drive by myself because my wife doesn't like driving in it with me.
Because
I tend to drive it like it's meant to be driven, which is not her cup of tea. So.
Well, we have this ongoing joke on the podcast about how you see all the good cars circling Cherry Creek Mall. And when we do see something like a Cayman or you know a McLaren or just something up in the mountains, it sort of restores our faith in car humanity a little bit. So I'm glad that you're out there driving. You said you have four cars, so what else do you have?
So I have a 1992 Jeep Wrangler that's slightly modified. That was kind of where I learned how to wrench on cars. It's extremely easy to work on because it's high off the ground. It's really open engine bay. And I got that thing when I was living in Vail. And I had a Subaru WRX at the time, and I got into hiking 14ers, and the WRX was really bad at going on trailheads. So I got this old Jeep. I think I paid like $2,500 for it.
Really?
It was 10 years ago, so it was just an old Jeep. It wasn't classic at all. Now it's actually appreciating. But I kind of rewired the whole thing. I put a new roof on, made it nice.
Well, so kind of rewired. I think you're selling yourself short here. That's no kind of project in my eyes. That's a big deal, right?
I didn't rewire like the engine harness, but I had all these auxiliary lights and things that didn't actually, the radio didn't actually work. So kind of that's where I got wet my feet with 12-volt electrical systems.
And you said you were a New Yorker, a native New Yorker, grew up in Manhattan.
You came
out because you wanted to live in Colorado.
That's right.
So, you know, that's sort of the classic story, right?
I grew up skiing as a kid. And my first job out of college, I was wearing a suit, sitting in a cubicle, crunching spreadsheets and, you know, dreaming of the mountains. And I thought, why not go out to Colorado for a few months while I apply to get my MBA? And that was 10 years ago, and I never left.
So CFO of Vinyl Week, please. We didn't talk about the fourth car yet, but you've got this fleet of great cars.
Fourth car is just boring. 2015 4Runner. Does everything well.
I've got one of those. I've got a Tiguan, which is as cool as a 4Runner, but you've got to have a normal car, right?
Except I'd have to say, if the most boring car in your fleet is a 2015 4Runner, that's pretty awesome.
That's
a very, you're right, I agree, that's a very common car here, especially in Colorado. You think they'd give them out at the border if you basically like as you when
Welcome
you move
to
here.
Colorado. Here's
your 4Runner.
Yeah.
But I think the 4Runner is one of the coolest sort of like mass produced commonly available SUVs though. You know, it's like it's a real truck. It's
but
a real
they don't
SUV,
ever lose
though.
A cent. And
I
would say
crazy.
People talk about like, you know, I don't know if you listen to Spike's Car Radio. And they it's such a great show because Spike Ferriston, he was the head writer on Seinfeld, among other things. And so he's definitely got that sensibility. And they were talking about how there's sort of this new concept, right? You wouldn't even call it celebrity ownership of a car adding value, but just celebrity within the car world or whatever.
Sure.
And I would argue that people say, oh, I want to buy something like a 4Runner from Colorado because it won't have rust on it.
Right.
But I think there's something like, you know, maybe a little bit of that Colorado rubs off, and I'm buying a little bit of that sort
I think
of
you're
dream.
Right.
You're
yeah.
living the dream.
I think you're right.
But those things don't ever lose value,
they,
right?
They don't lose value. And kind of the theme to my aficionado for cars is I like the old school.
Yeah.
And that's one of only a handful of body-on-frame vehicles out there.
No, that's arguably the most modern old school car still produced.
This year, the 2020 is the first one to have the eyesight, you know, radar cruise control.
Okay.
The first one to have touchscreen. So
still got the little digital clock, like, right? Like
exactly,
just like in Marty McFly's Toyota.
It's the oldest new car you can have.
Well, and that's like, and Toyota does a good job with that. What they do, and this is why they're so reliable. It's like, this component is not broken. Why would we change
it?
Can't carry it over, And it's like, they don't spend a lot of time trying to like reinvent every single wheel that doesn't need to be reinvented.
Totally.
And that's why their cars go.
They're not selling people on the infotainment system of the 4Runner. It's for its capability. And that's like the last thing that's prioritized. The radio actually sucks every half hour. It like resets itself and goes, but I don't care. Because the fact that that's the last thing on their priority. Yeah, the fact that that's the last thing in their priority list is what appeals to me.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I like that.
Well, they can't sell enough of them here.
No, they
can't sell enough of the FJs that are still around.
Yeah.
Why don't they just bring it back? They don't have to change a thing. Just bring it back.
Sell a million. There's almost a business case to be made for just bringing the FJ Cruiser back for just Colorado. They could probably turn a profit
on
it.
I think so.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So do you have a big garage or do you park them outside?
No,
you're in Boulder. Boulder, for those of you listening who don't know, not only is just Denver, Colorado, Denver is expensive, Colorado is expensive, Boulder is the most expensive place. So,
I live outside of city of Boulder, Boulder County.
But you probably don't have a six-car garage.
I have a two-car garage.
Okay.
So my two German cars go in there.
Right.
the Jeep lives kind of off to the side on this concrete pad where, you know, the trash cans are on the side of your house, and the 4Runner goes in the driveway.
Okay. As long as it's under a blue tarp, you're good, right?
Exactly. So, I do have a blue tarp from the roof line down to the ground, so it protects it. But yeah, my wife and I were thinking about moving somewhere where I could get like a 6-car garage.
Yes.
Yeah.
But then COVID kind of ended, but now it's back again. But being able to do things like this makes me glad I don't live in Buena Vista or something like that.
Yeah, it's sort of the curse of the catch 22, right, of living in Colorado. We have these great roads, right? We have these great Jeep trails and all that. But houses are expensive. I mean, I don't know anyone that's got more than a 2-car garage.
Yeah.
You know, it's really hard to acquire a collection, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, you've kind of got to decide where you're going to cut your corners or where. Something like a Jeep is fine outside, but it's...
Yeah, I think the Jeep and the 4Runner are fine.
The trade-off is worth it, I guess, is what I mean.
I think so. I'd like more space, but I'm pretty fortunate to be able to just have those off the street, right?
Yeah.
I was still living where I grew up in New York City. You're lucky to have one garage space or one car, so then it'd be totally off the table.
I want to dig in a little deeper with that too. I mean, you know, I mean, I sort of, you know, formed my love of cars while I was living in Chicago. You were in New York.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I didn't really know anyone with a car when I was in Chicago. You probably knew no one in New York with a car, right? How do you acquire that sort of taste for, you know, being an enthusiast?
I think it's the people you meet at a young age and the cars that they might have that impress you with it. So I had a camp counselor whose father had a Porsche 928. So we take the bus back from
game
camp.
You can pinpoint it.
Yeah, and it'd be outside in the driveway. And I'm like, what's that? I think it looked like a spaceship.
Yes.
You know, I was 7 years old, 1992.
Yeah.
And
you said
like,
a 928?
928, So, they thought that was going to replace the 911 as the flagship.
Yeah.
Then I had a babysitter. When I was 8 years, my parents are both attorneys. They both worked tons of hours, so I was kind of raised by our babysitter.
Sure.
And she had a 1982 Supra, second generation.
Ooh, nice.
So we'd tool around town in that thing. And
that was impressive.
It was
at
fun.
That time.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And so then I had a ski instructor who had a Porsche 911 and took me for a ride in it once. And I was like, this thing is the greatest thing ever.
Wow.
And I've wanted to own one ever since. So I still keep in touch with him now.
That's a ski instructor with a 911.
Yeah.
Like,
all right.
Like,
talk about like me living the dream, right?
Yeah, that's like straight out of
it. Could a ski instructor swing a 911 these days?
Well, he's also the tennis director.
Okay. All right. There's that.
And he was.
Was this out in Vail?
Yeah, he's still out in Vail, and I think he was pharmaceutical sales before he became a ski bum.
Okay.
So, and he went to law school too, so he's different. He got me my first job in Vail and helped me move out here, so I'm forever indebted to him. Greg, if you're listening, I know you say it's not true, but it really is.
Well, great.
Yeah, I love that you can pinpoint it to sort of those three things. I have a video when I was a kid. We had a next door neighbor that had a 911 Turbo, black one, and silver BBS wheels. I remember to this day. He was a swinging bachelor type, you know? I mean, he could afford it, right? And I have a video where I had a video camera. It was Thanksgiving. We had family in town. I'm outside taking video of the family or whatever. All of a sudden, I sense this garage door opening next door, and then I hear the car, and all of a sudden, the video swings from the family to this car as it backs up. I mean, I can almost pinpoint it to that moment, right?
Yeah,
we're like, oh, yeah, that was the first time cars
wild,
like that were on my radar.
I can't remember what happened last week, but I can remember what happened 25 years ago. What color the VW bus was that my neighbor had,
who
let me sit in it when I was 7 years old.
I had a Montessori school teacher when I was about that age who had a van again. It was green. It was probably a generation older or two than yours, had the round headlights, but that car stuck with me.
Yeah.
So we usually ask people what their car history was and how they got to what they are now, but growing up in Manhattan, probably don't have much of a car history until you got to Colorado?
I went to high school in Westchester, so my parents moved to the suburbs when I was about 8 years old.
Sure, okay.
So we had a 2-car garage there, and there was 2 Volvos in there, which I thought were
so
the least cool cars in the world, but now I kind of wish I still had
240s
them.
240s or what?
No, it was a 740 GLE station wagon and a 92 940. Which was my first car.
Okay.
Which is literally a brick.
It's just like the
slowest, really nice inside, you know, for a 16-year-old, but it is just a total brick.
Was it a sedan or a wagon?
It was a sedan.
Yeah.
It was like this like blue-green, like very 90s malaise color.
Yeah.
Had a really cool like multi-spoke alloy wheels.
How East Coast are you, man?
I know. My parents like safety, you know.
Yeah,
their lawyers
are
very conservative. They were very safe. The 86 was supposed to be my car, but then my mom decided that it didn't have an airbag, so it wasn't appropriate for me.
Yeah. I dipped my toes in the Swedish waters for a while. My first car as an adult living in Chicago, I got my first or second wheel job or whatever, I bought a 2000 S40.
Nice.
So, but that is the one Swedish car that I've ever owned. But that was a fun little car, punchy little 170 horsepower
turbo.
Yeah,
had a 5-cylinder engine,
I think this was a 4-cylinder, this one.
Okay.
I think the 850 was a 5-cylender.
Yeah.
This was the low rent one.
Got
but,
it,
yeah. Yeah, but, Yeah, I've, you know, that kind of...
Yeah, well, I guess I've dipped two toes in the Swedish world, but in the other Swedish world, I've had... I'm a multiple Saab owner.
Oh, cool.
So I had a...
They're fun cars.
Yeah, I loved it. I had an 87 Saab 900 cool. base engine, manual, when I was in college. And then we had an 89 coupe, which I also love. Basically, that had the 16-valve engine.
Nice.
That was a little quicker, so yeah.
Tell Adam what you grew up with, what kind of car. Well, what nationality of cars do you think this guy's family was driving back in the day?
Well, you know, I would have just guessed something like Japanese or American, but the fact that he said that makes me think, I'm going to go with like British maybe, a Land Rover?
Close.
Not far off. So when I told Ryan this, Ryan grew up in the Midwest. He thought what I was talking about was so exotic.
Very exotic, yeah.
I grew up two Peugeots.
Okay, cool.
Two Peugeot 505 station wagons cool. when I was young.
Yeah, those are good handles, so. And those would open kind of the side, the big square handles.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, 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 yeah.
It was had a third seat.
The reliability aside, there's some question marks around that, but in terms of like a package, the 505 wagon was amazing, because it was kind of like what we were talking about with your Vanagon, is that not a big footprint, but it had a ton of interior space. Mm. And it was really well designed in that respect. And I think those 505s are actually, they've sort of stood the test of time, I would say, in terms of style and design.
That's if these still were around.
If they are still around, yeah. Every like 9 months, or I guess I should say, maybe every year and a half, one pops up on Bring a Trailer, and that's about it. But, you know, they were good looking cars. They were designed by one of the big Italian design houses. I can't remember which one,
okay.
But
okay.
But yeah. But,
it looks like a Bertone.
It might
I could be wrong
yeah.
about
it
that.
Does, but, yeah, yeah.
It was either that or Italia Design. I remember that.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It was one of the big Italian firms. But yeah, I grew up with multiple of those. I also had I drove a Mercours when I was young, an XR4 Ti.
And that's digging pretty deep,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. I mean, it's a German Ford. And then then we went, my family went a little more boring, but then, so I got into cars because my dad was really into it. And so he always liked weird, exotic stuff. He slipped a Road and Track magazine right into my crib just as I was born. So that's how I got my affliction, I guess. Yeah. So, but
And we drove all German cars. I mentioned too. Yeah. We're looking at your Volkswagen. I mean, I grew up with Rabbits, Dashers, Beetles, a lot of diesels in there.
Yeah.
So. So it's like none of us grew up with a ton of power.
Not a lot of power.
Yeah.
A lot of personality.
The hot rods in the bunch.
A lot of personality, no power.
I think that thing might have been slower than the Vanagon.
Yeah.
I timed the 0 to 60.
Have you driven a diesel, diesel Dasher?
I haven't, no, but I timed the 0 to 60 in my 92 940, and it was like 15 seconds.
No kidding. Wow.
It's very, very well built, but not necessarily for speed, though.
Correct.
So, I'm out of beer. So. Doug, you're out of beer, and you're getting close at him. Let's take a quick break.
Let's take a quick pause.
Grab some beer, and we'll be back.
Okay.
Okay, we're back. It's the steering committee recording live from Brews Beers up on the northwest side, I guess, of town you call this. I don't even really know where we are.
The main
I think
brewery.
It's Denver.
It's closer to Boulder. So
closer to Boulder.
I think
okay,
is
northwest. Yeah.
Well, it's their main brewery. It's on 67th Ave. It's their brewery and tasting room. Tasting room.
And shout out to Scott Yates. I see one of your mythology distillery barrels here. So anyway. Small world. As we've talked, Adam and Doug and I, Rose, we know some of the same people, so small world. But kind of an exciting announcement. We are entering into a partnership with Swiss Trax, the maker of these really high-end garage floor tiles. Yeah.
Very, very cool.
In fact, on the way here to Brews, my wife called and said, hey, there's a big truck out front unloading 14 giant boxes of tiles. Were you expecting this kind of thing?
Yeah.
So I'm very excited to get those installed. So this will be a partnership moving forward. We will be working more and more with Swiss Trax. I think we'll have a sort of a formal spot for them next week, and we are offering or going to offer a URL to our listeners for a discount on Swiss Trax products.
Cool.
So we couldn't be more excited.
Yeah, so stay tuned.
Did you go with the design, colors and black?
So I didn't because
I'm
a boring boring guy, and I went with all slate gray, but obviously with Swiss Trax. Basically, I was talking to our friend at Swiss Trax, and referred to them as Legos for adults.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of what they are. So you can do a pattern, you can do whatever, but I'm going to try to keep it simple on this first one. Hey, maybe one of you will, you know, will do your garage next, but we couldn't be more thrilled to be working with Swiss Trax and in having Swiss Trax join our sponsors along with Brews Beers, and we'll have more on this front to come. But we talked a little bit, Adam, about your Vanagon. Let's talk a little bit about your 987 Cayman. It's a Cayman S. I know it's Guards Red.
Correct.
How'd you find this car?
So I live in Gun Barrel, which is just north of Boulder. There's a little shop in Niwot called Gun Barrel Import Motors. It's a father-son-owned shop. And father kind of dabbles in used cars. I think it's mostly so he can just drive fun cars all the time.
He priced another guy that got it figured out.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah. There's cars that have been there for like a year, but I saw it there, and I was looking for a Porsche. Originally, I wanted an air-cooled one.
Yeah.
And then knowing the way I drive, I thought maybe seat belts and ABS and airbags would be a good,
be a bad
good
idea.
Thing.
So would you say you are an assertive driver?
Yeah.
All right, we're going to go for a drive.
Would,
okay.
That's one way to describe it. My wife would probably use different language.
Mine too.
But I'll put it this way. When I got married, all of my friends who gave speeches at the wedding touched on what it was like to drive with me.
My man. All right.
I've never killed anyone, so I don't know.
Sing the song of our people on the block.
I like to drive enthusiastically.
Yes.
But you made an impression on all your friends, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. It's an experience to drive
with me. Job well done.
So I had always wanted a Porsche, and I was finally in a position to be able to get one, and did like months of research, because I'm an economist by trade. I very much need to like be comfortable with any decision I make.
Crunch numbers.
And honestly, for me, it was almost a letdown when I actually bought the car, because it was so much fun to like, I had something every day, you know, when I was trying to kill time, you know, for 50 minutes here, 50 minutes there, I could research this. I could
We talk about this all the time. It's the best part sometimes.
The hunt is what we live for in some ways.
You know, in Colorado, I think probably Colorado has a higher percentage of Porsches than your average state, but we're not in New York, we're not in LA or Chicago even or whatever, where there are a lot of people who, you know. So it's not like you have everything to choose from. When one comes up, a good one, you kind of have to jump on it, right?
I was looking for a while, and I was looking between 996s and... Then one of the mechanics that brought a 996 was like, why don't you look at the Cayman? It's, you know, a little bit more money than a 996, but it's a lot better car. They got the IMS bearing issue mostly sorted out.
Yeah.
So I test drove a few. I was like, oh, that's pretty fun. The mid-engine of it, it just, it's solid. I've tried to make it go sideways a lot. Failed most of the time. So it's been a blast.
You know what? You want to know how to go sideways in that car? Just take your foot off the accelerator mid-turn.
if you're hard on it, lift off oversteer, I guess.
You go sideways 4 or 5, ask me how I know. But were you looking for a red car in particular? Or just looking for the nicest one you could?
No, I wasn't looking for any particular color. Yeah. In fact, initially, the red was a turnoff to me.
Okay.
I kind of wanted something more unusual.
There weren't a ton of like paint to sample 97 Caymans though, right? I mean, that's kind
there
of
was
a newer...
There was a blue color. I forget what it's called. Mm. But that's what I was, you know, I do with what I got. I love the Guards, right?
Yeah.
It's just so classic.
You gotta
so
buy the car,
Porsche,
you can't buy the color, right?
Exactly.
I mean, I tend to think, like, in general for me, my Porsche palette would be like, I like to be more conservative, so your silvers and your whites, things like that. The only bright, vibrant color I like, because it has history, is actually the Guards Red. The fact that it has that name and the fact that they've been producing it for so long. It's really the only like vibrant color I'm really attracted to in the Porsche world.
And I think it's actually a single stage paint. So it's old school, and it goes back to the roots of it.
Yeah.
And when you drive that thing, it's never going to blend into anything.
Yeah,
you know?
For better or worse, right? Yeah.
Somehow I haven't gotten a speed ticket.
Oh, okay.
I've even got pulled over it at once. Yeah, knock on wood.
That's
why I didn't drive it here, because I'm sure if I said that, I'd get one back.
Well, call me when you do get a speeding ticket. I do speeding tickets as an attorney, so give me a call.
I'm reformed. I haven't got one since the last one I got was in my 91 Honda Prelude.
No kidding.
Passover going to a Seder.
That's a great car,
the
too.
Cop said, do you know how fast you're going? I said, I have no idea. She said, 91. I'm like, I think that's impossible. I have no way that's possible. But she's like, yeah, it was, and I got a ticket for it.
Have you found that generally, though, once you're up in the mountains, it's pretty unusual to run into a speed trap? And it's generally on the interstates here in Colorado. At least
that's
my
experience. Yeah, I would agree. And Waze does a remarkable job at telling you about those things.
Does.
So as long as I have Waze on, you know, safe driving is not necessarily fast driving, right? Fast driving is not necessarily unsafe driving.
Right.
It depends
where
you're driving.
Agreed.
The Vanagon going 80 miles an hour down Bilpass is way less safe than the Porsche doing 110.
Agreed.
It's built for it. It's got the brakes for it. It's got the handling for it.
Yeah, I mean, assuming you're paying attention, like, it's going to be able to stop quicker, it's going to be able to merge quicker and things like that.
Yeah, I think the Cayman stops from 60 to 0 in like 100 feet.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy.
Well, that's the thing. So what year is yours? It's a
07.
An 07. Yeah. And you look at those specs, and they're still good specs now.
Yeah.
So,
it's really a blast to drive. It's not so much power. I think it's like 250 horsepower, 300 foot-pounds of torque. Maybe it's the other way around. But it's faster than my WRX was. I had an 06 WRX, which was a blast to drive.
We can talk about that.
I got like 15 speeding tickets in it over 9 years. But it's like a much more refined version of it. You know, that was raw and and unrefined. Yeah. And the turbo would kick in at like 2,500 RPM. The torque curve on this 987 is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like above 2,000 RPM, it just goes.
Is it that low? Like when it kicks in?
I mean, it peaks at like 4,000.
Okay, yeah.
So, but honestly, from 2,000, if you floor it, in no time.
It's got enough torque to basically sit in third gear probably most.
Yeah, it's a very smooth power band. It's a 6 liter. You know, 3.4 liter.
And you don't have that crazy high gearing like
6 feet.
3.4 liter. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. You don't like where you can go 60 in second gear or whatever, right? I mean, even that car has some pretty tall gear. Sure. Okay, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and which is fine. I mean, like the engine is great, and it's awesome that it has that sort of adequate's not the right word, but it has plenty of power, and you feel like you're driving fast. And that's not even its best attribute. I mean, the handling.
Yeah, it's
is
a
like,
momentum car for sure. Yeah. It's like a Miata. Well, it's on like, steroids,
but it's like a momentum car, but with enough horsepower though. I mean, absolutely. It's definitely not feeling weak, but it's like handling is like its absolute hearty piece though, right?
Absolutely.
I mean,
shout out to our friends at the Automobili Rally here in Colorado. We weren't able to do it this year, but we heard it was a really good time. Ryan Evans, who owns Bruce here, I know was out in his M3. Yeah. But I had done it the previous three, and I'll do it again. Just couldn't do it this year. But last year, when Doug and I did it, we were in the base Cayman, and there was a guy in a 987S.
There was a 987S. I can't remember if it was an S or not, but
it was an S. It was an S.
Okay. So we did this, and I'm sorry, I'm jumping on your story here, but we did McClure Pass, which was the best. Yeah.
Carbondale to Peyote.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
It was the best part. It was the highlight of the trip. We had, what's the name of the race car driver?
Diego. I can't remember his last name. He was in a 997-1. No, that was the previous year.
Yeah.
Previous year was in a 997-1 GT3, an orange one. This year he was in, I think, a 991 GT3 RS.
So we have an official Porsche factory race driver leading it, and he comes over the top. He's on his radio, and he's like, all clear, no speed traps, go, 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 go. Everybody opened up their car. They're driving. Everyone's fighting their new sort of top speed.
Yeah.
And there were some heavy hitters on the trip. There were some 488s, Ferraris, F8.
No, I'm sorry. As we were corrected, F8.
There was also an F8, though. There was also and some Acura NSXs, the new ones.
Yeah, McLarens.
McLarens, things
R8s,
like that.
You know.
But the two Porsche Caymans, everyone noticed that the Porsche Caymans were like punching outside their weight class.
They were
keeping up with faster cars because they could just carry speed through corners at a much higher rate. They instilled so much confidence, I think, in the drivers, and they were just able to just like keep up.
We went. We stopped for ice cream at a hops farm, near Peonia there, and that was really the talk. Wasn't about the big hitters. It was about the two Caymans that were
like
keeping up with them.
I walked around and I heard everyone just saying, "Like, did you see how fast those Caymans were?"
It's just the best all around car. You know how Colorado, when there's curves, it gives the yellow recommended speed sign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you go double that.
Yeah, it's like a challenge.
It doesn't even lose.
So what in that car, what do you like to drive here?
Yeah, where are your
favorite
roads?
I live in Boulder, so kind of I have a little bit of a loop during COVID lockdown when there's no one on the road. I kind of developed this, kind of go north through Left Hand Canyon up to Ward, and it's speed
limit.
That's
pretty tight in there, isn't it?
There's a lot of turns. Yeah. Speed limit 35 or 40.
Yeah.
So you can kind of exercise going 10, 15 over the speed limit. So if you do get a ticket, you're not going to jail.
Yeah.
Which I like to avoid going to jail.
That's always good.
And
shout out to our friend Gordon F. Spot on YouTube, who we see just got arrested for quote unquote street racing while at Monterey Car Week. If you need to go, I guess you're not licensed in California. Never
I can't
mind.
Help him out, but yeah.
But we can.
But if you do find yourself on the wrong
jail
side,
is good.
But I'm really. I didn't know that was your specialty, Doug. So this is great.
It's not my specialty. I do it. I only do it for friends and family.
More of a general.
Well, I'm honored. Right. I'm honored that you offer that.
If you get a call, just let me know about it.
Yeah, but it's an uphill, spirited drive. It goes up to 9,500 feet, and it's a blast. I've also, Big Thompson Pass is a ton of fun. Starting in Loveland and going out.
So in my previous Cayman, my base Cayman, it really took to Golden Gate Canyon just west of
I've done that
Golden.
A bunch too. That's really fun.
The GT4 really finds its place on Squaw Pass up to Mount Evans.
Yep.
A little bigger speed,
There's always a ton of cars in that ride though.
Well, there is. So you got to get up early. And even the peak to peak is fun. You know, you go up to to Estes or whatever. So Left Hand Canyon is one that I've never driven in a sports car. So I'll
pop out of Left Hand Canyon and Ward and then go north on the peak to peak to Estes Park.
Okay.
All the way back around to Lyons, back to Longmont. I'll stop at Harbor Freight. It's on the way.
Awesome.
awesome. You know, pick up some cheap tools and then come home. It's like a 2-hour
nice.
Lift.
Yeah.
Get some I'll joke with my wife, I'm going out for dog food. Pick up the dog food in Longmont, you know. That's the end of the trip. But.
You're like, honey, there's an organic dog food company. It's in Steamboat. It's a quick trip. I'll get right up there. I'll be right back.
You strike me as someone who enjoys your cars. Who isn't afraid to say park in a parking lot?
No, like I'm the exact opposite, actually. When I park in a parking lot, I park in like the far away.
Oh, good. Then okay. Then
yeah, you see like, okay. I just got a ding on my 4Runner at the airport. I left it for a week.
I hate that.
But yeah, I'm trying to be more of the, like, I love my Porsche, it's a great car, but it's not super rare.
Yeah.
As far as Porsches go, it's pretty low budget, so I'm trying to drive it more. I haven't gotten to the point where I'll let any of my dogs in it yet, but I hope one day I can let one of the dogs in. I'm not there, my OCD is too big for it, for that.
No, you're right.
Well, you are driving your car.
You're in a safe spot here. This is a safe zone.
Thank you. I appreciate
that.
We can
talk about these things.
For a year after I bought the car, it left my garage and went into my garage in the same trip.
An A to A car. Point A.
Even speaking about the dogs, I love dogs, but like the thought of like a dog's claws on like the leather seats, that would just drive me nuts.
People driving with their dogs in 911s, I'm like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I would love to be that, but I don't have the money to do that.
Neither do I.
For me, I have to keep my car nice, my GT4 nice, because to me, I mean,
it's almost an investment you can't justify. No, I'm not the same way.
So wealthy that I can, get another one, right?
And, one day.
Well, maybe, right? Well, of course, in any car now, you can't get another one. So you gotta take care of what you have. Yeah. So red interior, tan interior, classic combination. Yeah.
It's beautiful inside. It was owned by someone supposedly who was really conservative before.
Yeah.
The shop where I bought it from had been maintaining it since it was about 2 years old. I have all the records going back to 2009.
Do you know where it was? Like, do you know where it lived?
It was from Porsche of Colorado Springs.
Nice.
I'm the third owner, so it was actually a demonstrator car.
Yeah.
So it has every single option except Passam.
Okay.
So it's very well equipped. I think the base came in that year was 50, the S started at 60, and the sticker on this is 70. So
no kidding, so it's pretty highly optioned.
Yeah, it's pretty highly optioned.
Which steering wheel do you have? Do you have the round one or the triangle?
I have the triangle.
Okay, all right. Because most of them do, right?
Yeah.
Doug has a weird hang-up about that steering wheel.
You don't like it?
No, I have a weird hang-up.
I'm just kidding.
Well, okay, all right. So you're right. A majority of that first generation Caymans have the triangle steering wheel. Some of them, even the 06s, you can find one that have the smaller sort of circle steering wheel.
Oh, about the 911?
It's very rare. Yeah, it's very rare. It was a very expensive option. But you can see right down the middle of it on the early ones, you can see the seam where it's designed to break apart for the airbag. And it would just annoy me looking. It's almost like it's gotten highlighted as I've gotten older, like the leather is like shrunk or something, and it's just like you can see it more now on the older ones.
I feel like it's something you see in pictures that you don't necessarily.
I guess, but it sort of annoys me though. I mean, I would.
You're probably one of one that gets annoyed by that.
Maybe.
No one else cares category.
One of two now.
Now that I mentioned it, I've ruined it for everybody.
So what wheels do you have?
Not the lobster claw. I don't know what they're called.
I think those lobster claws look a little too heavy on the Cayman, honestly.
I agree. They look great on the 997. Big rear end.
Yeah, but, it fits balance wise more for that.
Yeah.
But it's so you have like a.
It's 18 inch. I'm not sure if they have a name or not, but it's just a stock one.
Yeah.
So I think it's 8 spoke or 12 spoke maybe.
Right, so it's an upgrade from the base wheel, I think, was a 17. Is that at the time?
It's definitely,
if I'm mistaken.
Yeah, it's an 18.
Cool.
So yeah.
Any other. You haven't done anything to the car, right?
I like to keep it totally stock.
Yep,
this
me too.
One.
Yep.
The Jeep and the Vanagon are great platforms for blind canvases for modifying them, but the Porsche I like to keep totally stock. Yeah.
I learned my lesson with the 718 because I had this base 718, which of course the one hit against that car is the sound, right? It sounds like a Subaru, which fine with me. I never had a problem with the sound other than it was a little quiet with the stock non-sport exhaust. So I put a Fab Speed exhaust on friends at the former 303 here, now our Automobili Exotica friends. But they, and it transformed that car just because you could hear it.
Yeah.
But do you think I got a cent back in trade? The point is, these modifications are only going to hurt you in the end. I would have probably gotten the same or more had I had the stock exhaust. And so I'm really in the camp now, just let let it be. Let it be.
And especially with the Cayman. Cayman is really like it's like a precise formula. It's in perfect
especially
balance.
Especially the 6-cylinder
one. The factory perfectly
It's perfectly balanced. And it's like, we all think we can make things better, but it's almost like when you change over here, then something over here is out of whack.
Totally. So. And you know what? It's a very practical Porsche, too. Yeah. It only has 2 seats, but it's got plenty of cargo.
It does.
It has the frunk, it has the trunk, it has compartments on the side.
Have you ever sat in your own frunk, though?
I have not sat in my own trunk.
We joke about how every YouTuber, they feel compelled to sit in the trunk.
Yeah.
And never a million years would I sit, I'd probably break something. I mean, I'm 250 pounds, 6'4", or whatever, but I have no desire to sit in my own trunk, but maybe if we got a press car, maybe I would sit in that trunk. But
sit in it for it to be free, I would totally sit. And then I'm 5'7", a lot smaller than you, I could probably fit in it nicely, but what I love about it, it's just a driver's car. Yeah. There's nothing spectacular, nothing about it that would light you up on paper. But it's just everything it's even easy to change the oil on. I can change the oil on it in a half hour. It has a cutout for the filter. You have to get it up in the air, obviously, because it's like 6 inches off the ground. But it's meant to be worked on. It's meant to be driven. It's a very pragmatic sports car.
It's a car that's built in sort of the celebration of the art of driving. That's really what it is.
Yeah,
it celebrates like just going out and going. That's the car that gets you deciding, I'm going to go on a 3-hour road trip to go get a bag of dog food or
absolutely,
whatever else,
yeah.
to go do that, because you're like, you don't care about the actual trip, you just care about the driving and the pleasure you have from it.
Yeah,
so
I would argue it's in sort of a class of one. I mean, you could say there's the Evora or whatever, but okay, cars with an actual dealer network, I think the Porsche is in a class of.
It is.
With my dad, he was between the M2 and the Cayman T.
Yeah.
And then after we recorded, we're like, should have mentioned the Evora, GT400 or something. It's sort of in that.
Yeah.
Well, but you have to be able to find one of these and then get it serviced. And he lives in rural Wisconsin. Lotus is not happening, right? So, anyway. But I wanted to come back to your van again because you have a turntable in there.
I do.
And you had some records.
Yeah.
And you, of course, you pointed out, these aren't valuable records, so.
Well, let's do it. Let's leave it on the cliffhanger for a second.
Okay, all right. We're going to take a break and we'll come back. I want to know what records you're rocking in that van again.
Sure.
We'll be back. So.
Hey, we're back. Having a really nice chat here with our new friend Adam, and
he's cooler than I thought he was. I mean,
he's definitely cooler than us.
Why are you talking to us?
We'd like to go back to our tradition of giving away a nice pair of Gooder sunglasses. It's sort of our. I've been trying to match them to sometimes the car of our guest or the guests themselves, if I can. And I think I've done a good job on this one, but you can decide.
Okay.
I've given you two choices today. So this is my favorite pair of Gooders. It's the Going to Valhalla Witness. It's all silvered out. It's all gray and silver.
These are the Daft Punk
style, this is,
right?
These are the OGs. This is a traditional Wayfarer
style. This is what I wear? Okay, I think this is what I wear.
Or because you do work for you're in the music industry and you have a steeped history of vinyl records. This is from their Rolling Stones collection. It's a sunglass that's made out to look like the album cover of Exit on Main Street.
Oh, Exile. Yeah. Exile on
Exile
Main Street.
Main Street.
Come on.
Sorry, kidding.
The Rolling Stones have some pretty amazing
album covers. Yeah, the artwork on it. So this one is your choice.
Right?
So it's your choice. You choose which one you think you like better. Ooh. So, yeah.
It's a tough choice.
And you don't have to decide now, but Gooder has been
They've been a good friend to us, and we're a big fan of them.
I feel like that Gooder's really popping, right? Like all of a sudden, everyone knows Gooder, so we're awesome. You know, we're thrilled to be.
We're happy to be.
I think it's cool that you can say Gooder and it's a real word now.
I know, right? It's Gooder. Although I'm trying to teach my daughters good grammar, and it's a little confusing because they know about Gooder as well. So
these are nice.
Yeah. Hey, those look good on you. Those might be my choice.
Those are my favorite. I've had multiple pairs of these, and in fact, this is actually a pair I bought for myself, but I wanted to give these as an option to you. So don't no pressure. I'll get another pair of those.
But you can ask my wife. She makes fun of me for wearing grail fits. I just really like gray. you can see my chakras and my shorts.
So you're going with the.
I don't know. I reserve the option to decide.
Okay. All right. So that's cool.
These Rolling Stones ones are sick though.
Well,
the yellow lens. Yeah, I like the packaging on them. For our podcast audience, the packaging on these is really the attention to detail.
It's pretty tight.
It's incredible.
It's pretty tight.
All right. So try them both on. Yeah,
I'm gonna
think
have
about
to
it.
Decide afterwards. It's gonna be a tough decision. Yeah.
We'll make a decision here, but no pressure. So
these are very cool.
But But like I said, with Gooder, I think the fun thing is you can customize the, with all their choices, you can match it to your car or your personality.
Yeah.
So many fun choices. Yeah. So check
again,
them out.
I can't believe how Gooder is just now all of a sudden everywhere. So thank
they're
you.
They're very
Gooder,
popular, yeah. And they're a great product. So.
I can tell just by looking at the lenses, too. They're polarized. I had a LASIK like 7 years ago.
Yeah, you can see all the yellow spots in your lens.
Like, I need to. Oh, wow. Comes with the
Rolling Stones one.
I might have to get the Rolling Stones.
Well, oh, I didn't see that.
No, the
that's
pin,
pretty cool.
Well, there's some stickers in there too. So the Rolling Stone edition comes with more sort of like swag on the inside of the box. So yeah,
that's
check them
cool.
out. So yeah.
Very very cool.
Yeah. So no pressure, but you decide. So you decide.
We love
so,
Gooder. Yeah, no, they're great. And, speaking of cool stuff, you were talking about obviously being in the music industry and all that. What sort of audio equipment are you? You mentioned you said you had a Riga.
I do. Yeah.
Vinyl Me Please has a relationship with what's the name of the company?
So we have a relationship with Project.
Project, which I know makes great stuff.
They make great stuff with U-Turn out of Boston, handmade out of Boston. Also makes great stuff. And most recently was Sound United, which is the parent company to Marantz and Denon and Boston Acoustics and Polk Audio. So I have the fortune of being able to sample a lot of really cool audio equipment.
Yeah.
And audio gear is a lot like cars. If you like tuning cars and modifying cars, there's always something to change and optimize on your audio setup as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's pretty fun.
So what are you running? What's your rig right now as far as audio equipment?
So I have a couple. I have a few, actually.
Oh, you are a true audiophile.
Yeah.
You've got more than
but
one.
But my home office, because we're all remote now, Vinyl Me Please.
Yeah.
My home office has a Riga Planar 3 turntable.
Mm-hmm.
With an upgraded Audio-Technica Shibato Diamond stylus.
Yeah.
I think it's like a VSH-450S, which basically... It's just a really good cartridge.
Is it Japanese? Is that Audio Technica?
It is Japanese.
Okay,
Japanese. So
what does a cartridge like that run? I'm just curious.
It's like a $500
cartridge. Nice. So more than the turntable, or about as much as the turntable?
No, it's about a third of the turntable.
Oh, is it? Okay, so Riga makes a range.
Yeah, so the P1, I think, starts at, which is a great, great car. A great, great turntable.
Yeah.
Starts at, $700-$800.
Shows how much I know. Okay, yeah.
But, it's a really solid deck. It sounds great. And vinyl is analog, so it's the more upstream you go, the better.
Yep.
So it all starts with the needle, because that's what's actually touching the record. That's the pickup. It's a really sensitive microphone. And even the cool thing, I think, is you can invest in gear. Like, I spent $500 on that cartridge, but the shelf I got and screwed it in with like 6-inch screws and just studs into my wall, only cost $80. And that makes the cartridge sound 10 times better.
Isn't that,
because it takes away all the vibrations possible, because it just totally stabilizes it.
Analog is a whole other thing. Of course, we could draw the parallel between these analog cars.
Well, I was going to say, it's like the more you talk about it, it's like, there's a difference as you upgrade each component. Much like when you go from a Kia to a Porsche. I mean, each component, like on that suspension, is like
it all adds
more,
up.
Yeah, absolutely. It's more analog, and more
I think
bespoke,
vinyl,
and it's like it. There's a big difference in performance.
Totally.
So,
and I think listening to vinyl is a lot like driving a manual.
Yep.
There's nothing practical about it.
It's better.
You talk to anyone who does it and they'll agree with you that it's better. And it's because of the experience.
What sort of amplification and speakers?
So I have a Marantz amplifier. I think it's the PM8006.
It's sort of the retro one?
It's a two-channel one.
Okay.
It's very basic.
Solid state, not tubes or anything.
Yeah, solid state.
Okay.
Not that there's anything wrong with tubes, but it's... Before having all the before working at Vinyl Me Please, I just loved collecting vintage audio gear, because I just loved the way it looked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it didn't sound as good, because the technology has progressed a lot. And so
just like with cars, old is not necessarily good, but it can be.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
It can, but old definitely always looks cool, but doesn't always drive cool. Whereas so you're saying with older equipment it looks cool, but doesn't always sound
good.
Yeah. It could, but it's like
and so
not
I,
always.
What, great. What yeah. I invest yeah. I invested in the turntable and cartridge first, and I was like, I really need something better downstream to break the most out of it. So we did a partnership with Sound United, which is the parent company of Marantz and Denon. And so I got access to a sweet deal with the Marantz amplifier. And then the Jake, if you're listening, I hung out with him at Red Rocks actually on Friday at the Wu-Tang concert.
Yeah.
He hooked me up with a pair of Polk Legend 200 speakers.
Those have had great reviews, amazing
They're amazing
reviews.
Speakers, and they just kind of not, and they get better the more you listen to them, yeah. honestly.
And they suit the music you listen to. Right?
I listen to a lot of Grateful Dead. Yeah. I listen to a lot of Fish. I listen to a lot of jazz. I like that warm quality. And Morant just has this really
yes, they have a warm,
they've stayed true yes, to their color yes, and sound yeah, over the years.
Yeah.
And,
hey, speaking of Fish,
yeah,
I know you're sort of on the opposite end of town than we are, but my favorite restaurant in Denver here is Esther's. And Esther's, do you know Esther's?
I know the song, Esther's.
Okay, so yes. So shout out to Paul who owns Esther's. All their pizzas are named after Fish songs.
Oh, I've heard of that place,
okay,
actually.
Yeah,
I mean, this Fish like foodie group on Facebook and they talk about
Esther's is the best. So yeah. Esther's the OG, they call it. The original location is about 3 blocks from my house. They have a newer one up, it's not Park Hill, it's Oneida Park. They have one there that's, yeah. I would argue, even a step up from the original. And now I hear they're opening one in Wheatridge, so not terribly far from you. But shout out to Esther's. You have the best pizza in Denver. Yeah.
Top
all they've got the Fish songs.
It,
so.
Yeah. No, it's great pizza.
Yeah.
It's just a pro tip, if you will.
Yeah. And the thing about audio, you know, audio stuff is just the rabbit holes you can go down. So, like, naming stuff after Fish songs. There's a lot of material to choose from there.
Oh, yeah.
And going down the audiophile rabbit hole is really fun, too. So, I have all sorts of, like, foam treatments in my basement. It's in my basement. It has a concrete floor, which is pretty optimal for, because you want to minimize vibrations.
Yes. Yeah.
I haven't gotten quite to the extent of, like, putting a solely dedicated 120-volt circuit just for my stereo setup, which a lot of people do. So I haven't gone, you know, that far off the deep end. But I'm down there 8 hours a day for work. And
I love
I'm working in the industry, so...
Yeah,
you've heard about these guys that will like actually have the energy company come out and put a pole in their front yard, so they have their own transformer.
Yeah. Because
whatever
it is. If your turntable is plugged in the same circuit as your amp, the electrons could interfere with each other.
Do you run a power conditioner and all that?
No, or? I don't.
Oh, okay.
I draw the line somewhere. You gotta draw the line somewhere.
Well, just
otherwise,
like
it's just kind of
point of diminishing returns.
Yeah.
And that's I guess why the Cayman is a sweet spot. Right?
At the end of the day, like the $1,000-$2,000 it would take to do that, I'd rather have like 100 other records.
So you have the equivalent. Almost came in with the audio setup.
Pretty much,
I
want to have that balance between having good sounding gear, but also having plenty of budget left to buy records, because that's what makes me happy.
Speaking of, what's in your van? You have records in your van. What are those records?
Yeah, so I have I packed it up to go to the Bobby Weir show at Red Rocks a couple months ago. So I have the whole Dead catalog. I have American Beauty, Shakedown Street, Bob Weir Ace.
I'm a sucker for Shakedown Street because they tried to go disco and I love it.
Oh, it's amazing, yeah. I actually was listening to this. I have a video of it. I'll show you afterwards. But I was listening to Shakedown Street in the van and the car next to me realized when it stopped and I flipped over the record that I was listening to it on vinyl.
That's amazing.
And then all of a sudden, all four people were like, oh my God, they started pointing at me where they were not interested at all before. They just thought I was playing, like, why? No one plays that track on Shakedown. Like, why are you playing that track? You know, because there's a part about the experience of listening to vinyl.
Yeah.
Like, listen end to end on the album.
Yep.
Right? Like, listen to Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's.
Mm.
Listening it start to finish is way greater than the sum of the parts of just listening to the famous tracks on there.
Yep.
And the same thing holds true on vinyl. And listening to it in the van is just is who puts a turntable in a van? It's a stupid thing to do, which is why I think it's great. Yeah.
No,
but I don't think it's stupid at all. You said that,
it's
and
awesome.
I was like, that totally makes because like when we go up into the mountains, whether we go to a cabin or for camping, I mean, I think there's nothing better than just like throwing on some old records and just listening to them. Like you said, and you're kind of like, you kind of relax and you listen to some tracks that you might not have normally listened to, and then you appreciate them more. So I love it.
With you guys and your family place up in Breck, and there is a turntable and a bunch of records. That was the best part of that trip.
Yeah.
We sat, we'd take turns. One person put on a record, we were drinking, then the next person put something on.
Yeah.
And you,
it's the best way to relax.
I think Jim Croce, but it was still awesome. I love Jim Croce, but I mean, it's like someone stopped buying those records in about 85, and that's kind of where it stopped, but it was brilliant, you know?
It's so tangible, right? Like,
tangible
if you have
an
experience
like
with friends, they have a few couples over, listen to records, the next morning there's a mound of records on the coffee table on the floor.
That's,
there's evidence
but
of
it's
a
like
good time you had the night before.
It's a social event, though, because it's like a record will end, and then it's someone else's job to actually get up and go change it.
Exactly.
It's like, you know, someone else can pick something that they like. I think it's like so it's a mix of sort of like the having the ambiance of having the music, but also like a social interaction as well.
Absolutely.
So,
and you know what? Since I've started working at Bottom Me Please, I've gotten probably 10 people a turntable set up.
Yeah.
And all of them are really into it now. Like, I'm batting 1,000.
Yeah.
Nobody who I've helped get set up in vinyl is like, oh, that's stupid.
No one regretted it. Yeah.
Literally 0 out of 10.
Well, in fact, I think that's why Vinyl Me Please is killing it, it sounds like.
We're doing pretty well, yeah. It's a good time to be in the record business right
awesome.
Now. Awesome, yeah.
Awesome, man.
Right. Well, so good. So we've covered that. And Mike McHugh, hopefully you're listening. I know you're a fan. He is my buddy from college. It's a huge Dead fan. So
nice.
Hopefully he's getting some of these references probably more than I am.
We did a Grateful Dead box set called The Story of the Grateful Dead. And my CEO, Cameron Schaefer, if you're listening, huge shout out to you. He knew how much I was into the Dead, and I'm also a musician from a previous life as well. So he gave me he was an executive producer on this box set. He gave me a credit on it. So I'm an audio consultant. So I listened to the test pressings and compared it to the original and make sure it was all sounding good. And it's going to be nominated for a Grammy.
Amazing.
So I might be the world's first Grateful Dead nominated Grammy CFO, which would be the coolest thing ever.
We could easily get another couple episodes out of you.
Just on musical.
Of all the things I've accomplished, I helped break the Enron case for the state of California against Enron.
Wait,
But getting nominated for a Grammy for Grateful Dead trumps that 100%.
Can we ask you about the Enron thing? Because I saw the documentary.
Oh, the smartest guys in the room. So you know when they said burn, baby, burn?
Yeah.
So it was my job to listen to hundreds of hours of those trader recordings and map in the data how they manipulated the market and prove that they were manipulating the market.
All right. We got five more.
I thought it was a federal prosecutor.
No kidding.
So when I was listening to these tapes, my boss was like, you have a criminal mind. I'm going to put you in charge of listening to all these tapes. And they took advantage of this poor lady, Kathy, at the California
Criminal Power Mind.
I basically figured it out.
Amazing.
It made it really easy to figure out when they were breaking the law and when they weren't.
I knew you were going to be a good guest. That's amazing.
Fantastic. That's just a throwaway story for you. You're all like, right, on top of all the other interesting things I did.
Have you on again for sure.
That's true. But let me circle back to this, though. This is actually a divide between Ryan and I. So maybe you can.
What?
I know. Seriously, I'm causing controversy here. I love to listen to music when I drive. Ryan does not necessarily.
I would argue I'm a bigger music fan than you are,
absolutely.
Doug. But I do not like to listen to
music. I love listening to music when I'm driving.
The GT4. I'll listen to the Tiguan or whatever.
In the Porsche, I don't like to listen to music.
I like to
put it in S mode. I like to hear the engine that's right behind me. I can feel it. Like, it gets hot. The driver's seat gets hot in that car.
Yeah.
The AC on.
Yeah.
In the van, I blast.
I tried to explain that Cayman thing to you.
Well, that might be the difference. Yeah. I've never had
in the van because you don't want to hear it.
The van is different. So, but when I go like fun driving, like performance driving, I still like to listen to music. So that might be a difference there.
I usually have it on in the Cayman anyway.
Yeah,
but I have it low enough that I can still hear the.
You want to hear the engine?
By the way, you were talking about a new company you wanted to launch, right? Where they played the sounds of the car and electric vehicle.
I hate to break it to you, but Tesla does it already.
Elon put out an app for that. Yeah,
similar to the fart sounds, right?
Similar to the fart, but it's an exhaust.
But does he offer? So if I wanted to, could I buy like a 1962?
No, he doesn't go that
far. Ferrari GTO and be like.
So I still think there's an opportunity, right? Because there's lots of opportunity, but he did, there is a plug-in on Tesla that plays an analog
like an engine.
I want to put an RS myself.
For our audience, just to be clear, what I was saying is that I would build like a catalog of like some of the greatest sounding engines ever built.
Yeah, the curation.
It'd be a mix of like the sound, but also like there's got to be a computer telling you like, well, you're pushing this much like accelerator, so you get this much full.
Right,
like it's actually
time.
Exactly, all in time, right?
Because
we're gonna go to electric. I mean, that is unfortunately coming.
And I'm gonna be the last holdout.
I will be too. And I've told this to everybody. My stance on this is that electrification of automobiles will improve almost every category of automobiles. Except for things like the things we love, like the Caymans, the GT4s, the Porsches. It'll be like for every other, for your daily drivers and for your crossover SUVs, even for your Vanagon style things, like just having like tons of reliable horsepower available will make that better, but it will not make the sports car better at all. It takes one thing out of the sports car experience.
It makes it sterile.
Yeah.
Even though it's fast as hell, right?
It'll have tons of power and stuff like that, but it'll take the sound element out of it. And potentially also the manual transmission element out of it too.
Right, which is like, no gears.
So, yeah.
Do you listen to Matt Farah?
No.
Okay, so the Smoking Tire, sort of the big dog in the automotive podcast. He's got a buddy, and I wish I knew his name. He hosts a show, the sound guy, the musician guy.
Oh, yes.
What's his name?
Yeah, they...
He has a podcast where he breaks down songs and he talks about, God, I wish I should have done my homework. I wish I would have called this guy's...
Yeah.
You probably know this guy.
He does a very, like, analytical breakdown of, like,
yeah,
very...
take a famous track.
Popular like, songs and, like, sort of breaks it down as, like, sort of why you... Like, why do you love this song so much? Let me tell you why, some of the reasons.
Huh.
So,
where the samples came from. Where the, you know, and I can't...
I do love... So, one of our tracks at Vitamin Please is the classics track.
Okay.
And a lot of the records we've put out... You hear the record, you're like, oh my god, that's Ice Cube's Today Was a Good Day, but it's actually the Isley Brothers.
Yes.
Or
yes,
you're like, oh, that's Eminem's Slim Shady, and it's actually Labby Seyfried.
Yes.
And so, like, to me, that's one of my most, growing up listening to early 90s hip hop, like, going back to the stuff they were sampling, like LL Cool J and Ice Cube.
Half of it goes back to Parliament, right?
Totally, yeah.
There's another 10% Nina Simone, or, you know, some of these other people.
But this guy, Labby Seyfried, is one of the most sampled after artists. I've never heard of him before working my current job.
Huh.
Like, he has this song that worked out to be Eminem, My Name Is.
No kidding.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
This is a funk band or funk artist?
Yeah, he was, like, basically a studio session musician, and he just, like, in the world of underground hip hop, he's just like the godfather, but no one's ever heard of him. And he literally was doing this stuff 20 years before it became cool.
What's that Netflix documentary that's out about the session musicians? It's like 15 Feet from Stardom or something.
Oh, I haven't seen that one. Okay. I'll check it out. Okay.
But would Vitamin Please ever consider doing a soundtrack of Cars? I don't know if this has ever been done, but I would totally buy an LP, a vinyl LP with a Carrera RS with a, you know, a Ferrari, you know, you name it. You know, all the class, like, I'm telling
you. Well, our motto is lost sound sound. So I think as long as we can make it Cars that you don't see anywhere anymore.
No.
It's our obligation to preserve those sounds. Otherwise, who's going to listen to them?
There are other weirdos like us who would sit and listen to Cars.
Yeah, I like that idea. I can't make any promises. I'm just the numbers guy.
Well, fair enough.
I'm just throwing
enough,
it out there.
I think it's a great idea.
So along those lines, I do have a YouTube mix on my YouTube account of, like, what I consider the best sounding car sounds I can find on YouTube.
Okay.
I'll check it out.
Yeah.
But it's it's fantastic though. It's just like the highlight of it is like it's like a 1964 Ferrari GTO.
Who's the biggest dork at this table?
Just like, well, I think we all have an argument for it. It's a fantastic. It's Derek Hill, who's the son of Phil Hill.
Sure.
And he's driving a car. It's a 64 GTO. It's the more sort of like, you know how there's like the more curvy GTOs.
Mm-hmm.
This is the more straight, streamlined version they did at the very end. He's driving the same car as Dad drove at Le Mans at one.
Cool.
Up a hill in California, and he's just going all out. It was on Petrolicious. When they were still sort of like on their own.
Okay.
And they released two videos. One where he's like intercutting the sound with like sort of some commentary, but they have an entire video where it's just the sound of just a car going up the hill.
I need to check that out.
So it's a 3-liter, you know, V12. So a small displacement V12.
Look how small it is for a V12,
it's
right?
It's so fantastic. V12? It's like tiny little pistons.
Yeah.
Tiny little pistons going up and down. And just like,
it's a 3.4 liter.
I know. It's
straight six.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't see stuff like that anymore.
Yeah.
It just sounds... It's one of the best. I mean, to me, that's sort of the pinnacle of sort of sound when it comes to cars, you know, that type of thing. It's just like, it's because it's small displacement, multi-cylinder, you know, old school with like straight, you know straight exhaust or whatever. It's just fantastic sounding. So, anyways.
Hertz is on the stereo here at Brews Beers. Put you on the spot. Underrated Hertz.
Definitely underrated.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. I was just thinking about
everyone
that.
Everyone knows Stevie Nicks. You know,
right?
Same kind of clock.
Hart was amazing.
Totally.
You know, two women and, I mean, fantastic stuff. Yeah. But anyway, no, I agree. I think that I would totally buy that record if you came out with something like that.
What's your favorite tunnel? You're talking about the sound.
This is so Colorado. What's your favorite tunnel?
Like, I love going
it's Colorado, and it's a car guy question.
I love going through the Eisenhower Tunnel or in Idaho Springs.
Yeah.
In the tunnel.
The Twin Tunnels.
You just let it go to like 6,000 RPMs and just bang! You know,
the last time we went through the Eisenhower Tunnel was with a bunch of Italian stuff, and so you couldn't even hear us.
Okay.
And my 4-cylinder 708 came in.
It was like a bunch of killer bees.
Yeah.
Because you found a good tunnel with the
nothing sounds like the Italian cars, right? I don't care what you're driving. Nothing sounds like the Italian stuff, right? I mean, you hear, you're giving me a look like maybe I'm not correct, Doug. What are you thinking? What's better than an Italian V12?
I just think they're different sounds. And a highly tuned Italian engine, so we're probably talking about Ferrari.
Sure.
it's like a, it's definitely this like sort of high-pitched screaming noise. Yeah. It's very unusual, and you love it.
Yeah.
I mean, what I love about the Porsches, though, but I think like a Porsche flat six, whether it's air-cooled or one of the more modern sort of like normally aspirated water-cooled ones, they have a different sound to it. I like to call it like, it's sort of like, it's mechanical chaos in an organized way. It's like,
yes.
It's explosions, but it's like organized in a very perfect way. I just love it. Yeah. It's a very different
it
sound to me.
So it's more like someone's getting murdered right now.
Exactly. It's
screaming.
It's like, we're up here. Whereas like the Porsche is like, it's this perfect sort of like organization of chaos.
It's a little more street punk or something, right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
It's a little.
It's organized perfection.
I love this sound. I had a 83 Yamaha motorcycle.
No kidding.
And I would like sing inside my full face helmet while I was driving it, and like, sounds are really unbelievable.
Wait, are you a singer as well?
I sold that motorcycle when I bought the Jeep, and I haven't touched one ever
since. Okay,
all
right. But you're a musician. I mean, you're a man of many talents at a block. So. We should probably think about wrapping this
up. Wrap this one up for now, but we may have to do
a part two. I'm just saying, there's a lot of stuff I want to do.
I'd be happy to anytime. This is a blast.
We're hungry. We should go get some food.
We'll get some food before we have to get out of here. But
thank you for listening. Visit our sponsors.
Swiss Tracks.
That's
Gooder,
so cool that you got to deal with Swiss Tracks.
Brews beers.
Oh, yeah. We're very excited about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Excellent. Adam Block, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Please check out Vinyl Me Please at
vinylmeplease.com. Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. Easy enough. Adam, thank you so much. We're going to totally have you on again, and we're going to go out for a drive in the meantime. Thank you.